Let's get started here for today. Om Havamahe Kavinkavi Namupamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspada Anashrinvan Uthibhisseda Satanam Om Shri Maha Ganapataye Namaha Sada Shiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmadacharya Pariyantam Vande Guru Paramparam Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavitvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Sarvopanishado Bhavaha Dugdha Gopala Nandanaha Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gitamritam Mahat. So, welcome back, everyone. Since we had our small break and we just finished chapter 7, I thought that before we start chapter 8, we can just have a small review of the chapter. Be a good use of our time today. Then next week we'll start chapter 8 itself. In the text that we're using, the beginning of each chapter, I'm sure you noticed that Swami Paramarthanandaji there, it gives a very nice summary of the chapter. So I very much recommend you know, especially after you finish, you can do before, after you read that, you can always read that because it gives a wonderful summary. So later on you take your time, you look at it. It's very concise and gives the nice overview, main points, very nice like this. So in any case, after we completed the first 6 chapters, and those ones are mostly focused on the, what we say, Tvampada Pradhana. It's mostly focused on the individual, on Jiva. Because in the equation we look at in Vedanta is Tat Tvam Asi. Tat, that, the universal, the infinite, Brahman. Tvam, you, the jiva, the individual. And asi, are, like this. You, so that's the equal sign, right? Now in math, there are 2 different equal signs, actually. There's an equal sign which is 2 lines, A equals B. Now, equal there doesn't mean identical, because, for instance, ornament equals gold. Ornament is gold. Yes. Gold equals ornament. No. So that's A equals B, but B doesn't equal A. But here, this asi, you are, this one is the one with the 3 lines. Identical. It's an identity, right? Vedanta says we have an identity crisis. That's samsara, identity crisis, and that's what Arjuna has, right? He has an identity crisis. That's his problem too. But in any case, the crisis actually comes from a misunderstanding. Then the crisis comes. So but that's the whole story there. So in any case, so the first 6 are focused on you, the individual, and the jiva. Who is this individual? So this was discussed in detail. Then the second section is mostly, second section, meaning next 6 chapters from 7 till what? 7 till it'll be 12, right? So this is going to be more tatpada pradhana, mostly focused on the universal, like this. So that's what this chapter started with, the universal. The 7th chapter is where he started to discuss. Because in general in Vedanta then, what happens is each one has to be understood. Just to say, You are the universal consciousness.
Okay, very good.
I'm the universal consciousness. What's for lunch? And why the political issues like this? And what about my health and my problems in this? Then what did it do for you? Yes, I meditate. I think I'm universal consciousness a little bit every day, but then the rest of the time, I have to grind my teeth because of what's happening like this. So meaning that's not going to do it. It's like, you know, without really looking into things. Without looking into something to understand, it's not going to help. One has to really look into it to understand it like this. I really look in, then there will be some deeper understanding. Like, you know, we always give Vedanta circles a lot of time. We say since individual is universal is the equation, we take the most famous equation probably in the world, equals mc squared. Yes, we can all quote, equals mc squared. Energy equals mass times some constant, so I mean energy is mass. Do we really understand it? Well, some idea. So it takes that one has to look into to understand. Equals mc squared, I understand or not. If you're a physicist and that's your bread and butter, you're doing research or whatever, then yes, it'll matter. But this one has a much huger impact because this mistaken identity is cause of our problem, you see. So in any case, so the individuals looked at very clearly, totality looked at very clearly, and then we can see why it's one and the same. That's the whole thing. So here in this chapter, so Sri Krishna starts talking about the totality, about Ishvara, right? So at first he just praises a little bit because wants to say how important, how great this knowledge is, to make us curious that we want to hear it, right? This is one thing I found out with little kids first, I didn't know how to deal with. And then how do you get them to play with something and make it look interesting? If it looks boring to them, you make it seem interesting, now they want to do it. So he wants to get our interest and get Arjuna's interest in it. And he praises it also. One thing he praises, he says that among so many people, very few are looking into this. Meaning, so many people that even go to spiritual practice, how many are looking into what the essence is like this? Even amongst them, few. Right? So in this way, that it's something very rare obtained, and a rare thing is going to be more interesting, important, like this. Wow, I can get that like this. But in any case, praises and sets the stage for it. And when he introduces the topic also, he says he's going to teach Arjuna jnana and vijnana, in detail jnana and vijnana. And then also he tells about the two different jnana vijnana, and there we can say this is telling about saguna brahma and nirguna brahma. Because saguna meaning with attributes, with you know, the totality, but with something you can hold on to. At first that's needed, otherwise how am I going to get something that's just something very subtle? So this is the saguna, and then the nirguna is the vijnana, the wisdom, knowledge and wisdom if you want. One is, you can say paroksha jnanam, which would be you understand your mind. Other aparoksha, you can only know directly, because we'll get into it more, but the aparoksha, the nirguna, you cannot know that with the mind, right? Because people say there's nirguna brahma, formless, the infinite formless universal consciousness. The moment you say, let's just say from formless, here it's qualityless, formless. Formless isn't something you can get with the eyes. You know, see something formless with your eyes. Right? You can't. So qualityless, you cannot know with the qualityless, you cannot know with your senses, and you cannot know with your mind. Because mind only, the eyes know the quality of color form. The ears know the quality of hearing, sound, right? And the other senses. And the mind needs some quality to hold on to. So here, the only way you can know it is directly. So one of them also, so this saguna is going to be also, he wants bheda jnanam, bheda, where there's you and there's the God, and I understand something about the God, about the universal, about the creation. So I can understand because there's some quality there. The other one is abheda, aikyam, the unity, because you can only know the absolute directly by being it. You cannot, because the moment you know it as the other, that means there's a quality you know. So in here he introduces these two as also para prakriti and apara prakriti. Para prakriti, the higher nature, we can say this is the Brahman, and apara prakriti, the lower changing nature. This will be as the creator, as the manifest, as the whole universe, like this. This is what is being pointed out. Okay? Now the teachings in here, they're based on the Upanishadic teachings very much, but the moment you get into these things. And one specialty in the Gita is that as the end of each chapter, the last part of each chapter, which is not in the original, this was added, I think it's, they say, Madhusudana Saraswati, some centuries ago, added it at the end of each chapter, and in that summary each chapter, just that one verse, which is the same except for the name of the chapter that he gives there, it says, how is it? Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyasu. It's Bhagavad Gita is Upanishad, and also it's teaching yoga and Vedanta, Upanishad Vedanta. So it's both teaching you some means, preparation, how much karma yoga is discussed here so much, and also the what is the higher teaching of the Upanishad. So that's the specialty, it gives you both. Preparation, how to live life to prepare, and what is the higher knowledge. Both are put into there. Okay, so in this way. So in any case, so one point, he discusses many points there about Ishvara Sarupa. What is the nature of Ishvara? So one is these two, para prakriti, apara prakriti. Lower nature is the manifest, the changing, manifest is the changing world, is the creator, everything involved with creation. Apara, that's the apara, lower. Para, higher nature, is going to be the unchanging universal consciousness, universal presence, unchanging, qualityless. These two. Okay, so this is one thing. Now, one thing he points out there is, okay, now what happens is, where did this, when we look at this, we say, okay, where did this world come from then? Right? We'll say, before the world was there, obviously the Ishvara was there, the God had to be there. If the God wasn't there before, then it's not the God, right? Because we say God here, creator. Okay? Now, before. So before creation, there must have been only Ishvara. If there was Ishvara and something else, still there's something from creation is there. Still, that's not the absolute. Okay. So in one of the Upanishads, it said, idam egra asid ekam eva advitiyam. Before this creation, there was the one without the second. There was the Brahman. Now the Brahman, one fine day, woke up, decided I'm going to create creation, right? There's no day then, but we just have to make a story like this. Now the creation comes out. Where did the material from? You say God is the creator. Very good. But where did the God get the material from? So what'll happen is theologians will say you can't ask that question. God is all-powerful, all-knowing. You can't go there. Just have faith, believe. No, but I want to understand how. No, you can't. Like this. So meaning, have some faith, but don't think further than that. Which Vedanta says, why not? They have the problem, where did the material come from? But here there's no problem where material came from. We say, well, if there was only the God before, the material is the God. Right? So that's why we say the God is the abhinna nimitta upadana karanam, abhinna non-separate, nimitta upadana karanam, both the material cause and the sentient cause, the creator, like this, right? Material and intelligent cause. Both have to be from there. Otherwise, you have a big problem. Where did the world come from? How this? Okay. And now what happens is, when these things are brought up, then an intelligent person will say, that sounds very nice, but show me an example. Right? Now, our Buddhist friends, the Shunyavadis, they say it came out of nothing. nothingness. And their argument is, in deep sleep there was nothing, and then everything, you come out of nothing like this. Different arguments. I saw nothing in deep sleep. But we disagree with the reason is you can't find an example in anywhere that something came out of nothing. There's no example we can find. But here we do have an example of this one. This material cause and intelligent cause being one and the same. Creator, creator being one and the same. And we're all guilty of that, and it's called dream. Right? You got up this morning, you remember last night I dreamt this or that. So who created the dream? Who's the creator of the dream? You are. What is the material the dream was created out of? You. You're the abhinna nimitta upadana karanam. Tomorrow, when somebody asks you about what you dreamt, you say, I was the abhinna nimitta upadana karanam of the dream world. I was the creator, and I was the whole material, all me, like this. So in any case, so this is where we say that's why that you can't separate like this. So the intelligent cause, the material cause will be one and the same. Just like you do with your dream, you're the mini creator there. Here it's in this whole universe, okay? So this is an important point like this that's discussed here, because eventually you have to come down to there's only oneness, and the oneness shows the whole thing came out of oneness. Because none of these things are just brought up for just some philosophical, intellectual gymnastics, as we want to say. It's not a just for, you know, intellectual entertainment, but for ascertainment, for understanding. Understanding why this is, why there's only the oneness. That's the only reason for all this, no other reason. And why that's good to know, we'll get into it also soon too. Because, okay, then why do we want to know it? We'll get to there. So what happens here then, the moment there's a srishti prakriya, a methodology using the creation, right? Here talks about the creation, that the lower apara prakriti, the whole material, came out of that one, out of the changing nature of Ishvara, of the God, and the whole manifestation coming from that. This is the one that's used here. Different Upanishads might have slight different or even different ways that it tells how creation came about. The reason they have different ones is that the methodology of talking about the creation is not in order to validate the creation or describe the creation, but in order to describe Brahman. Because we say the whole world came out, the world came out of Brahman, exists in Brahman, goes back into Brahman. Just like somebody had, you know, 200 grams of gold, it was made into a necklace, later was melted back down. So the necklace came out of gold, was sustained by gold, went back into gold, same with the whole creation, like this. So the material cause that comes out of that is sustained by and goes back into it. That's how it is. Like this. The dream world came out of you, was sustained by you, went back into you. Like this. Okay? So in this way. So the whole creation is talked about in order to talk about the essence, not about the creation itself. That's why these seeming contradictions in different ways Vedanta talks about the creation are not important, because the creation itself is later, you know, negated. It's like when you have an equation, put X, and after some time X gets negated. It's you don't need it anymore. It's dropped. There's an exercise where X, you have to find out what X is here. But sometimes you have an equation and X, you have X in there. Later X gets negated. You don't need it anymore. So here creation is taken, and later it's negated. So it's not important what that was, what the creation was in this way, okay? You can analyze the whole dream, the psychological part, or you can understand the dream for analysis to understand you. Just the fact to understand yourself, that you were there observing the dream, like you're observing this. Talk about you, not about dreams. So it depends what you're using it for. So this is an important point here, okay? Now, when we talk about the para and apara prakriti, higher and lower nature, The apara, the lower one, is what we call parinami, one metamorphosis, changes, constantly changing. Right? The whole manifest world is something that's ever changing. That's its nature. Nothing will stay the same, for they say you can't bathe in the same river twice. People go to the holy river, they want to dip a few times, because they say, if I bathe in Ganga 3 times, my sins will be washed away. So you dip once, you come up. I'll dip again. I'll say, wait, it's not the same river. You didn't do 3 times. Okay, let me try again. You dip once, come up. Oh, the river's changed. You can't do it. You're caught in trouble. So you can't like this. So it's constantly changing. That's the lower nature. The higher nature, we say, is what we call vivarta. Vivarta means that the creation from that perspective is an apparent creation, not an absolute creation, okay? Vivarta, vivarti, if you want to say the one is a vivarti. It's seemingly creation. Like, for instance, you as the dream personality are going through a whole batch of things that are you have to deal with, that are there, I'd say, everything's changing, you have to deal with the dream world. When you wake up, you as the waker know the whole dream world was just an appearance. It was apparent, depended on you as apparent. So the dream character is in the middle of a whole changing phenomena. The waker afterwards sees it was just an appearance, that it went through everything, it just was apparent. So from the lower nature, it's all the changing. Higher nature of Ishvara, it's apparent from that perspective. Okay, so this is the important thing here, like this. Okay. Now, the whole issue we say, the whole issue is that we're caught up in the dream. You're caught up in the dream. You don't see it's apparent. When you wake up, you see it as apparent. So there's no problem anymore. Done. When I'm in the middle of this whole slew of life, it seems like a huge thing I have to deal with everything. But when I see it from the higher level, then I see it was just apparent, similar. The difference which makes this more challenging is that the dream, you wake up, come out of it. Here, you have to know it in the middle of it, not coming out of it, right? But what happens is the dream world is negate. It's how do you know it was a dream when you negate the dream? When you understand it was apparent. Here, when we understand the apparentness of it, then we see it as a dream. So the issue is we don't see the paraparakriti, the unchanging one. This is what happens, okay? In any case. So, since here, Krishna starts talking about the Ishvara, the totality. A nice analysis that's given of this is three different levels in which we can see the Ishvara. First one he doesn't talk about, but the second two he does. First one is what we call Ekarupa Ishvara. This is usually, for the majority of people who come to religion, to spirituality, where they start with the connection to God. Ekarupa, one form. Right? For instance, Sri Jagannath sitting here. My wife's now in Odisha, right? The whole Odissi dance, her whole world is this, comes from temple Jagannath. It's based with Jagannath like this. They have two postures, two basic postures. One is Chauka, the arms are held just like he does. Chauka, and the other is Tribhangi. Tribhangi, how Krishna stands, right? Like little Ganesha statue here is in Tribhangi dancing. But in any case, so all based on that. So Ekarupa, you have a form and a God to focus in. And this is, like in Hinduism, it's a very common, somebody, Ishta Devata, they like to go to this temple with this God, right? And at least here, you can choose your deity, many different ones, give some flexibility. A lot of other religions, this is the God in this way, like this, that's it. At least here it's saying, okay, there's some flexibility in how you can, from the beginning, this flexibility. But this is where it's starting, because, okay, I want to see, how am I going to see this infinite God? This, okay, here. Now what happens is the unfortunate thing is that in many cases, then people take that as sacrosanct and that's it. It's like, imagine, elementary school, this is it. Somebody says, hey, I'm going to go to junior high. I'm going to go to high school or college. What do you mean? This is it. Stay here in elementary school. This is. Say, well, I want to go further. Nope. It doesn't mean you learn things in elementary school, you throw them out. Till today, we're using a lot of those things. But we grow further. So this is a way to start. But then you have to go further. Then you'll say, tell the person who says, well, you say, well, it's true. I've been worshiping this deity for some time, and I feel so expansive. If the deity, isn't the God infinite, all-pervading? Yes. So how can it be just limited to this form? No, don't say that. That's blasphemy. What to do? So one graduates to see further, which is called Aneka Rupa Ishvara, which this chapter talked a lot about, Aneka Rupa, which is through all forms, not one form, in and through all the forms. Because if the God is creator, the whole God world is manifest as Ishvara, what form is the God not behind? Like this. What form isn't? It's like you have gold, you can make so many things out of it, not just one thing. Everything. So creation came from God. God is in it through all the creation. What isn't the God in and through? So this is where the vision is expanded. And this is a very important step. If somebody really follows bhakti, because here bhakti yoga is discussed, one has to expand to that. So take the beginning step, but then expand it further. Altar sounds like alternate. It's an alternate, right? alternate. But it's the alternate for the totality. So then you start having to see the God is an inter behind everything. Now that's a very helpful thing, because imagine that I have to, not imagine, this is what we do. We deal with so many issues, so many things in life, so many people, so many things, all directions. And all of them we're dealing with looking, what's the cause for this, what will fix that? We're looking at all the, in many different ways. Now, so we're dealing with so many things. I remember seeing as a kid, must have been on TV, I don't think it was in person, some tennis star practicing, and they have a machine that shoots the tennis balls, right? And it's like, 1-2 seconds between, shoots, so they have to go and hit them like this. So like that, all these things are thrown at us, how are we going to deal with? Now, when we look at many causes, many things, it's very hard. But imagine only one cause behind. You have to deal with one. So somebody who sees Ishvara behind everything, they have to deal with one. What a difference it makes. And also, when one starts looking at Ishvara as the one behind everything, then one looks beyond the limited towards the unlimited. Because something is coming, yes, you're focused on the cause, what's behind it, Ishvara behind it. Something good comes because Ishvara behind. Something negative comes, Ishvara behind. Problem comes, this comes, whatever is there, Ishvara behind. So your focus goes behind, not to the manifest, but what's behind it. So then everything brings your attention to that, like this. Okay. There's one, in one story, a lot of the stories I know through my wife's dance, like this. So this one, I think it's from Gita Govinda, I'm not sure. But in any case, this Radha is very angry at Krishna. Right? So it doesn't want to see Krishna anything. And what happens is, though anything she sees that's dark is a reminder of Krishna. So like, she sees her hair in the mirror, reminds her of Krishna, it's dark. The kajal, this black one they put on the eyes, that reminds of Krishna. Everything, whatever she sees, she gets very angry, telling her friend, I can't anywhere. She says, I should poke out my eyes because I just don't want to see, and everywhere I see something dark. And then she says, I can't even do that. I poke up my eyes, I'll be blind. I only see darkness. I also think of Krishna. So what happens is, for the devotee then, who see Aneka Rupa Ishvara, then it's bringing towards that. Now this is still a step. Even this is a step, but a very important step. Somebody who has some of this vision, then Life is so much easier because of just that. But then last comes Arupa Ishvara. Arupa Ishvara without any form. Here it's through all forms, no form, because when you see beyond it, everything is apparent. Everything apparent, only the formless is there. Only the formless Brahman is there. Right? And there is only that. You're also a form, right? I separate I and world. To see God behind everything is easier than seeing the God also behind you too. I say God is everywhere, but I'm not sure about through me. Everywhere else, okay. This is also part of the, if you want aneka rupa, that's also, this is one of the forms. This one great, great Mahatma, one of the greatest Vedantins, they say Kingpin of Vedanta, Swami Ramatirtha, came to the U.S. a few years after Swami Vivekananda in the 1890s, he came here. So his book on his talks, a few volumes, it's called In the Woods of God Realization. And the woods, metaphor he gives, look, there's so many trees, meaning all the people, the beings. What's this one? Another one of the trees. You identify with one tree, but it's just another tree. Just like those trees, this tree grows too. So whatever behind that, behind this too, like this. So this body, where it came from, yeah, that's also Ishvara. This mind, where it came from, also Ishvara, right? Also, same thing, the God behind this as well. Now what happens is, if I take myself as separate from Ishvara, I am limiting Ishvara. I'm saying God is limited, because God's domain everywhere except for within me. Meaning, you've limited the God. And if I say I want to see Ishvara, I want to perceive Ishvara, there's another big problem with that. Because you can only perceive material, something material. Consciousness isn't perceived. You say, no, I see you, you're a conscious being. No, you see this body, right? You don't see I, the conscious being. So to perceive Ishvara, to perceive the God, meaning you made Ishvara jadam, you made Ishvara be insentient, can't be. So these are some limitations in the regular bhakti, but the reason that came up is because of the God, seeing this as something, made the individual something separate like this, okay? So this is an important thing. So this way. Now what happens is, as from this little bit that we went through, Ekarupa, Anekarupa, Arupa. Arupa is the essence, seeing Vedanta, the one. There's only the Ishvara, not the rest is just apparent. Parina, rest is Vivarta, rest is an apparent creation, which we'll get into. Then what happens from this, you can see that what is the cause of samsara, what is the cause of going beyond samsara, of destruction of samsara. Seeing the world as a reality is samsara, because you cannot then not have problems. You cannot be in this world as the world is an existing world, as a reality, I, the individual, that, like the dream world. The dream world, the moment you're in dream world, no matter what dream you have, there are issues in the dream. Even the best dream, there's some problems, right? Remember, the best dreams you have, there'll be some issues there too. Like one issue is so nice that you woke up, right? And it's gone, it just remains an idea. So the moment you give the world a reality, when the dream you don't give a reality, you woke up, no problem with it. Where's the problem with the world once, with the dream world once you're out of the dream world? So the world itself, that's samsara karanam, not the world in itself, but by giving it the status of reality. Like somebody doesn't care about politics, the politics makes no difference to them. They're free from it. Not that they don't see this. Somebody involved in, it'll always be a problem. Sports, this is very important. My team is doing so well. Other person doesn't matter. For them, it's not. They don't give it a reality like this. So the world, source of samsara, give the world a reality. But seeing Ishvara, seeing the God behind, is source of destruction of my samsara. This is how samsara is destroyed, by seeing what's behind it, seeing the Ishvara like this, okay? So this is an important thing like this. Okay. So what happens then is we say what one can do then as they go through a spiritual path. At first, we're what we call world-dependent. We're dependent on the things of the world, on the people, on situations, everything. So this one has to be shifted to what we call the God-dependent, on seeing the one behind everything. Once you, that's from, you take a step further through Ekarupa and then Anekarupa. And then eventually one comes to self-dependent, self with a big S. Small S is me, the individual. Big S is the universal consciousness. And so going to that, seeing me, then, you know, the world is as good as being dropped because it, I see the unchanging instead of the changing. But the other steps are important. Without it, it'll be very hard to do it, like, you know, jumping straight up. Without going through aneka rupa ishvara to arupa, to formless, everything else is apparent, is not easy. So this is an excellent preparation, very important preparation we do this, okay? So in this way. Now what happens is, a nice small summary I think we did in the class itself about the Ishvara Surupa, what is the nature of Ishvara, is first of all what we said, mixture, there are two aspects, the para-apara prakriti, and then we said it's the source of creation, preservation, destruction. We said that. Whole world is the Ishvara manifestation. We said that. The last point, though, is when you get to the Arupa Ishvara, formless, what happens then? That is the... Then we say that one is the Satyam. This is the pure existence. And the world itself is dependent on that. Just like, right? The waves are dependent on the water. A wave can't walk around on its own, it needs the water. Right? The wave wanted to be independent, went elsewhere. It can't go anywhere without the water, it is water. So the wave has a dependent existence. Your dream world has a dependent existence on you. The whole world of the dream depends on you. So a world, something that is totally dependent, doesn't have its own existence, is what we call mithya. Mithya, that it's a dependent existence. So now your dream. Take your dream now. Where's the dream without you? It doesn't exist. Right? It's an idea. You take yourself away, there's no... You take away the water, there's no wave. It doesn't have its own existence. So something that is something else. You appear, things appear as something else in the dream. They're dependent on you. So now the whole world is dependent on Ishvara, right? Ishvara doesn't change. This is constantly changing. Just like you and your dream, Ishvara or Brahman in the world. Meaning that the world is mithya, it's dependent. If Ishvara manifests everything, it's only Ishvara. And so then Jagat becomes mithya. The Jagat is mithya. Jagat is apparent, an apparent creation. You know, just think of it. What, when we look at the world from what we know already from science, everything here is constantly changing. They've already said in the past, it's not something new. Now science is saying, but it's said before that the whole world is something constantly changing. Everything, every moment changing, changing. Something changing, what do you mean? What is it that's changing? There was a wave. What is that? Is it water? What is behind it? So there's something behind it, not changing. Water is constant, wave is changing. So changing, what is behind it? What's behind it has to be not changing. And from that perspective, the change is as good as being apparent, like this. So what happens is, we say, then the Brahman is Satyam. Jagat, manifest world, is mithya, dependent existence. No Brahman, no world. So it appears. It's Brahman appearing as something else. The dream world, you appeared as something else. Here, the absolute existence is appearing as something else. So now the question comes up. Now that we have a little bit of a picture of, there's the absolute reality, unchanging. The world is apparent. Right? Adiguru Shankara, he wrote down, said, I'll explain to you the essence of Vedanta in one verse. Now, the way Sanskrit verses are written is there's a meter. The first two padas, first half of the verse, was says, I'll explain to you in one verse what is the reality. So he only has half a verse left after that. And says there, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya Jivo Brahmevana Paraha. Like this. Brahma Satyam, what is the reality? It's Brahman. Jagan Mitya, what is the world? Mitya, meaning it's apparent. We see something as something else, right? It's the world is the rope, the snake, Brahman is the rope. Jivaha, Brahma, Eva, Naparaha, and the individual and the absolute, they're not different. All Vedanta in that two padas, one half of a verse. But in any case, so we say, okay, in this case, there is the Brahman unchanging, the Paraprakriti, higher nature of Ishvara. Knowing that, I know everything is apparent, so there's no problem, right? Now then, why don't I see this? Very simple, why don't I see? Just like I see the dream as a dream, and no problem, okay? Now, what happens is, again, the whole reason this is all studied, not for some intellectual gymnastics, as we said, whole reason it's studied is, why do I suffer? I don't want to suffer. That's always I'm working to get beyond suffering just to be happy. That's what I'm trying to do through everything. So why is it? So what happens is, the issue is this isn't diagnosed very closely. We have to diagnose the problem to understand. And this is the diagnosis. Diagnosis is we're seeing the changing and caught up. There's the unchanging, and the changing is constantly there. Now, why aren't we seeing the unchanging? Because the changing is so enticing and interesting, right? Very good. There's only that. Okay, to keep the mind pure and clear, so easier for me to see it, let me just eat very healthy, sattvic food, very little, not very, you know, very minimal. But I want my coffee in the morning. I really need my coffee. I'm tired of this food. I want to have that. When I was a kid, I remember this one cartoon in the newspaper said, Mommy, I'm thirsty, but not for water. One person that I know, he's no more, he was a very good doctor and chiropractor. Somebody would come to him with a health problem and say, okay, we'll work on it. From today, you're going to start eating just natural things, nothing processed. Let's start with that. Okay, very good. So tell me, what do you for breakfast? Like the person will say, I have this shake. Oh, I see it has some unnatural ingredient. That's processed food. Let's not do that. Let's have something else. No, I have to have this. Yeah, but if you're working with me, we're going to start with that, with your diet. No, I can't let go of this. So in this way, we have a whole idea of the world, and very hard for me to let go of it, because I see the changing, it's the changing. And whatever your idea of the world is changing, USA is the greatest democracy in history. I want to hold on to that idea. It's not anymore. Good morning. By saying that, I might be put in, it'll be online, I might be in prison tomorrow. So the thing is this, we see the changing, the unchanging we see like this. We take the changing, we're so caught up in it, and we take that as reality, we don't want to see beyond that reality. We hold on to it very much. And there's the word for that, and that word is called Maya. Maya, the three gunas are playing around, right? And we're caught up in the whole show that we're not seeing beyond it. Now what happens is, as we said, the show is enticing, and the reality is there's nothing. It's, you know, there's no thing. It's just pure existence. It's not so interesting, and it's very subtle. One has to really look very, very subtly and closely, so put everything else aside. You know, you can't put the things aside. We put aside through viveka, through discrimination. I discriminate between the changing, what's constantly there. So it takes very subtle attention to do it. One has to really want to do it very much. But the thing is, my conditioning, and I'm used to, I hold on to this. So this is what gets in the way. That's why I don't see it. Right? If I really, really wanted to see, that was really what I wanted to more than anything else, I would see. But I have many other agendas. And actually, I'll tell you, this is one thing I've seen over the years. You come to study Vedanta. When we come to study Vedanta too, there is a part of me that really wants to know the reality, wants to see beyond this. But I have other agendas too that are even I'm not aware of it. And those, as I keep looking closer, have to be dropped. And naturally, they're dropped. Like this, naturally. Like where I came from in the ashram, always trying to get people in, come to class. So I had that samskara in our classes too. And slowly over time, from different things that I learned, people will come when they're ready for this thing. You put an email, you put this, people come, finished. Somebody says, oh, you know, I'm sorry, I can't come. Okay, very good. People come as much as they need to, not for us to bring them into it. We're here because we want to look into it. If I have another agenda, I want people to come, now I'm going to be compromised. I'm going to be thinking, oh, there are only these many people. Let me call these people while they're not coming to class. My focus would be that instead of inquiring into the truth. So like that kind of thing, that was one agenda in class, where the agenda in class should only be the inquiry looking into this, nothing else. So that's one thing I learned. So that's one agenda. Because the ego has many, many agendas to it. So as I come to this, anything I come to, there are many agendas. So slowly as we do this inquiry, the other agendas I notice, and slowly I have to drop them because it's only for this, okay? That's why here also, once talking about Maya and this issue, then he says, okay, in order to look into this, one has to have tremendous devotion. Bhakti is needed for it. So then he analyzes, says there are different types of devotion people have. People don't have devotion, don't look into it, that's a different story. That's just worldly life, and until the person's ready to look to something further, they'll be caught in worldly life, no problem. Then somebody wants to look further, they'll have different agendas, so he says different kinds of bhaktas. First he said artha bhakta. The artha, somebody that's in trouble then turns to God. Which at least then they're seeing, okay, this let me try to reach something beyond. So good. Not just for themselves. So one thing. But there's some agenda there. Then he says, artharati. Artharati, somebody wants to get something. It can be as much as blatant as, you know, I want to be wealthy, famous, blah, 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 whatever things I want to get. Or I want the good things, let my take care of my family, be healthy in this. Or even prayer for let other people be... Let all, sarve bhavantu sukhina, let everybody be happy, let everybody be peaceful, even this. But I want to get something from the God. So still there's an agenda there. And these two first kinds of bhakti he talks about are what we call sakama. Sakama, there is an agenda, I want to get something, there's desire there. The issue with that is, first of all, that anything you get will be temporary. Anything you get, whatever it'll be, temporary. One king talked about in Bhagavatam, Yayati, I think his name. What happens is, he lived many, many years, enjoyed all the sensual things, everything was getting old, and he still had desire. So he asked his sons if they can, you know, give him their youth. And they didn't. None of them wanted to give. The youngest one, oh, father, you sure, I'll trade as you have my youth. So again, he used hundreds of years, whatever his son's youth is. Still, he still didn't do it. So finally, he learned, no matter how much I try to fulfill my desires, it's not going to do it. So worldly is fine, because worldly eventually also come to you. No, that's not going to do it. So even if I use the God for getting something, whatever I get, it's ephemeral. Before I know it, it's gone, and then what? So that sakama bhakti is a state, and can have different, you know, anyone you can break into different, you know, more selfless, more selfish, kama, whatever. But that then eventually one has to go beyond. So those are the two first types of bhaktas talks about. Then says, then the one only wants to find the Ishvara, the God, only wants this because they see that's what's going to solve the problem. Because we have an idea of the God, we want that God to help. What is the God itself? Because then I know that, I know it's beyond this samsara, that's going to solve the problem. So that's the third type he talks about, jignyasu, one who wants to know. I want to know what the truth is. Knowing that truth, I see what's beyond this changing world, and that's, you know, beyond this, they call it, right, samsara sagara, the ocean of samsara. It seems impossible to cross. All you need. So, this is jignyasu. Now, jignyasu as well now is looking in the right direction for getting to the essence. But still, in this case also, the Ishvara, the Brahman, is still paroksha. It's still not separate from them because they haven't found it yet. They're a seeker. Maybe seeking in the, you know, more mature, more, if you want to quote, correct direction, meaning more direct direction will get them there. Other ones are earlier stages, so there's nothing wrong with, but as one matures, they're going to look further. They're not going to try to fix the world in order to solve the problem, right? That's not what's going to bring me my happiness. I have to look at myself, because the world will always be the world changing. I have to look at the issue is with myself and how I look at things. That's the issue. So the jignasu is looking into, but still they haven't seen it. So still it's an idea, meaning it's the other. It's not them yet. They haven't seen the Brahman itself. Because Brahman, as we said, you don't see as something, it's only your very self. The last fourth type gives the where the bhakti has come to fruition completely is the jnani. And yet for the jnani, it's aparoksha. They know directly as their own self, because the only way we said you can know nirguna Brahman, the formless, the absolute, is as yourself, because it's never going to be an object. If it's object, we said it's limited and it's material thing. Yourself, it's the consciousness. But the thing is, we lack viveka, so we take myself as a limited thing, and we take the consciousness as something limited. Way earlier classes, we talked about anyonya adhyasa. We do superimposition both directions. The term in English, like count in both directions, this way and that way. We take ideas of the consciousness I put on the body and the mind. These are limited things, now they're the conscious. Where they're not, it's like reflecting light. They borrow the consciousness. It reflects in them. And then I take the consciousness is something limited, body, mind, like this, in that way. So then I make a mixture like this. I superimpose both directions. I think it's a body, mind. I superimpose on the consciousness. Consciousness, body, mind. So there's a mixture there. But the jnani sees through viveka, through clear understanding, discrimination, through not being caught up, having some vairagya, not caught up in all the changing things, because they see, whatever I get, I'll stay in the same place. You know, seemingly I get somewhere, but after some time I see I'm in the same position, same place now after so many years. So see, that's the limited is not going to help me. So vairagya, these things are not going to help. Viveka, subtle discrimination between the consciousness and body-mind complex, between on universal scale the one presence, and the manifestation, the changing. Through this viveka, they see I am not this limited one. Out there is not a limited thing, the one presence, inside, just the consciousness. These aren't two separate things, as we said, in this way. So this is what happens. Now, so what happens is, otherwise I'm caught up in it. I'm caught up, I have raga, dvesha, likes, dislikes. And through these, I get caught up, moha, I get infatuated, I don't see things clearly, I'm caught up in everything. And then with viveka like this, as I look into, then I see, you know, I get to see this more clearly. okay, in this way. Mm. So Sri Krishna here talks about these, okay, so somebody wants to know the universal through bhakti. These are different levels of bhakti one can go through, or different types of bhaktas. The Sakama Bhakta has these trappings with desire. They're not going to, you know, it's not going to solve all the problem. Nishkama, Jignyasu, is going to be able to see, you know, look into it, learn how to look into it. And then the full fruition Jnani, one has clear understanding of it in this way. And then it takes, you know, one has to have a lot of patience with looking into this, of course, in this way. One thing we talked about is, towards the end, when we talked about that those whose papa has reduced, whose the fruition of the net of the demerit reduced, meaning there's more merit, meaning this person starts to really think to look into this. That's the interpretation we took, which is very interesting, because that would really be the reducement in demerit. I'm starting to think and look into this, because otherwise I'll stay still within the realm of caught up in things. A lot of religious life, if not most, is still materialistic religion. I wish I will go to the heaven. Materialistic religion. That's still artharthi. I want to get to another place, right? In this way. May the God be protecting me and my people, or this artharthi. So the demerit reduced, papa reduced, meaning now I'm really one looking into it. I'm not caught up, don't want to be caught up in the changing, because that's endless. Let me see how I can look into this more deeply. So that's what pointing out. So this is small review of the essence of this chapter. And in this, so Sri Krishna opened the door, started talking about totality. What I'm saying now isn't from interpretations I've read, but it's a well-known second chapter. They say second chapter Gita, Sri Krishna's teachings, they're everything. The rest is going to just be expansion. Somebody knows second chapter, understands, and that's everything. So here, when we talk now about this section of Gita, these six chapters we started from the 7th to 12th, the essence of this one also. I get the essence of this one. The rest of the six aren't needed. But we'll keep looking into it. So if we totally got it, no need to come. Not just to this class, to any class finished. You're graduated. But if we want to look further, the other ones will extrapolate and look further and more detail. And one very interesting thing about this is that we can be dealing with two things. We can be dealing with inquiring, looking to the reality, or we can be dealing with the complications of life, of meaning worldly life. There's these two options, right? Just like you can be asleep in the dream, dealing with the dream, or with the waking. So you can deal with the world or try to inquire to beyond it. So when we're looking at these things, at least we're putting an effort to inquire beyond it. Most other things we do aren't of that nature. Again, we have to do our duty, and we can do as karma yoga. We can inquire them too. It's not that we can't. But in general, unless, you know, I've really looked into a lot, if I don't spend a good amount of time looking into these things, then very hard not to just be dealing with just the worldly things in a worldly way. Very hard not to. So that's why, it's, you know, putting time for this is very precious to do. And on the weekend we're doing it also, that's, you know, meaning, you know, somebody really has to want to because so many other things, so that's great. But then one needs to really take their time, stick to. And we talk in the class, if one really wants to look into it, they'll reflect on the things, take time to reflect on, think about them, meditate on, ask about, read about, then all these things, because then one is looking into it. And some of the things may be explained aren't explained as clearly. Some of the things I understand more, some not. That's okay. and things not understood, you take time to think about or ask about, like this, to clarify, because, you know, explaining person can make things sometimes be unclear too, or just in a subtle topic or something unclear like this. So, you know, really we should put the effort to look into. The whole thing is about learning meaning inquiry, looking into this. It's not, the Gita said this, Sri Krishna said it that way, that's sacrosanct, I'm not going to ask about it. No. Why is it like this? I didn't understand. Okay, so can give some pointers how I can look into it some more. Because, again, we said we have to think, we have to understand, not just take things because they were said like this. Right? So in this way, it's inquiry. Shri Krishna's teachings, Upanishad teachings are there, we learn them, and we use it to inquire, to look into the reality, my reality, look into it. I can attack it by using logic to attack against it, but that's not going to be very helpful. But that it's not fitting with logic, I don't understand for this, then I have to ask, yes, because not just that I accept it, it has to sit. I have to sit and see, yes, I see why it's like this. Okay, so that's something that when we look into that, as jigyasu, somebody who's inquiring into, wants to know, you know, has to do. Okay. So these are just a few thoughts about this chapter. I hope they've been helpful. And then next time we will start looking at the next chapter. This being said, any questions you have about this chapter or Gita teaching so far, anything, you can take a few minutes to look into. So try when we go on with the classes, the participation is, you know, of course, listening closely, whatever doesn't sit, asking about, and taking your time to reflect in, review, think about, ask questions that come up, ask about, because that, you know, because as somebody studying this, you have to look into it like that. It's not just hearing a few points and this is one thing, but then you have to reflect on, then, you know, it will have more of the effect like this on you, okay? That's really what it's for this. That's how transformation will happen. My understanding like that, okay? Very good. So let's finish here for today, then next time we'll continue. Dachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Thank you so much. We'll see you all next time. Have a good week. In April, the text we're using, I don't have many more copies. I'll scan and send you that one chapter, because we have two chapters in this. I've given them all out, so I'll make sure to send to you. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Okay, take care.